Hey guys, I want to welcome Ben Chung to this podcast episode. He is the co-founder of Kinjas, which is a world-renowned dance entertainment group, and he's the co-founder of Break Hits, which is an app integrating breakdancing with high interval training. And he's also the founder of Choson, which is an Asian American clothing brand. And yeah, we met at an event with one of our friends, Grace, her own jewelry brand. And I've heard of Kinjas before, and you're also another Korean-American myself. So wanted to just welcome you onto the show and kind of share, you know, a little bit about your story, how you got to doing what you're doing, because what you're doing is definitely not a conventional route, but it would be really cool to hear your story of how you got to where you are.
What's up, Ray? Yeah, thanks for having me, man. Glad to be here. And yeah, as you mentioned, we met at the Lupin Benjamin Holtrup collab event a few weeks back. And yeah, we've been linked via social media, and here we are via podcast. Well, via Zoom, via podcast. Yeah. But yeah, man, thanks for having me, dude. As you mentioned, we were talking a little bit offline before we started recording, and you know, you mentioned the term unconventional or non-traditional way of, you know, approaching business and or life as a whole. That term unconventional, I think, is something that I've learned to really embrace as probably my greatest asset. And the reason I say that is because, I mean, whatever is considered to be conventional, that's all subjective, you know what I mean? So then when you have conventional being subjective, then unconventional is also subjective, you know? And I think we kind of term these, or we define these terms in a way where we look at what does the majority do, right? You know, like for us as Korean Americans growing up in LA, you know, under immigrant parents who immigrated here, you know, there's kind of a path that they even followed, right? They're like, well, you know, we're here in America, where there's a way to make it here. There's the American dream that we're here to create for ourselves, and then ultimately for our children, for them to pass down to their children. And the way to achieve that is you go to a good school, you get a good job, you make your money, you move into your house, you know, you have your kids. And, you know, you go to church, like, you know, there's like this kind of this model, this mold. And, you know, my parents and my family was no exception to that. You know, I think that was what they had intended to, you know, kind of like create for my family, or like my brother and my sister and myself. But I was kind of always, I don't know what it is. I try to like dissect it these days, and I've always, like, you know, I'm a middle child. And you know, anytime anyone would ask me, they're like, oh, so you must have like middle child syndrome. I'm like, what's that? They're like, yeah, you know, you're like, you know, always like crying for attention because no one's paying attention to you, because you know, the older one gets all the attention because there's the firstborn, and then the youngest gets all the attention because they're the baby and they need to, you know, and then the middle just kind of gets overlooked. And I'm like, nah, I don't think I ever like struggled with that, because I almost like never really cared. And like, I think I got plenty of attention, but then I was like, maybe the reason I was getting all the attention or getting plenty of it was because I was such like a concern or a problem to my parents. Because I never paid attention. Like, school was never something that I valued. Horrible student growing up. All throughout, you know, elementary school, junior high, high school, and barely graduated high school. I was almost like not going to be able to walk, you know, like, because my grades were so low, and I didn't care. And like, I kind of was a problem child in the sense of I only cared about things that was fun to me, you know. And for instance, you know, so I dance, and I've been dancing for over 20 years now. But before dance, I was really into skateboarding. And I thought that I was like, oh, okay, I know what I want to be when I grow up. I want to be a professional skateboarder. And you know, my mom thought that that was insane. She's like, that doesn't exist. There's no such thing as professional skateboarder. That's not a real job. And I'm like, yeah, look at all these people. Like, I heard they get paid and they're sponsored by these companies and all these other things. And I'm like, I'm going to do that. And then, you know, she's just like, whatever, you're going to go to college. You're going to, you know, you're going to grow out of this phase, blah, 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 blah. And then you'll grow up. And then, you know, fast forward a little bit, I got really deep into skateboarding where I started to get pretty good. You know, I even had like the attention of like my local skate shop. So like, oh shoot, this kid's kind of good. And they would kind of float me some gear here and there, like, here, like represent our skate shop. Like, you know, shout out Valley Skate and Surf. You know, they would give me like stickers and, you know, sometimes they'd give me like free t-shirts and like discounts on like skateboards and stuff like that, skate decks. And so I was like, oh shoot, I'm getting some free stuff. Like I'm almost there, you know? But then, you know, there was along with skateboarding, I guess, I don't know, at that time, I don't know. There was this weird sort of stigma that skateboarding was a crime or skateboarding was like for misfits and stuff. And I'm not gonna lie, I kind of hung out with the not the cleanest crew, you know, and I kind of got myself into some trouble with these guys. And so once my mom saw that, she's like, nope, you're done skateboarding. Like, this is bad. You know, I'm not gonna lose you to like gangs and all this other stuff. So she made me quit. She threw away my skateboard and was like, you're done with this. And I was like, all right. And you know, that was right as like high school transitioned. And then so once high school came in, you know, I started fresh at a new school. And I, again, still unmotivated, didn't care about school, didn't care about my grades. And then I barely graduated, and towards my tail end of high school was where I found dance. And I found dance kind of, I don't know, by accident, I guess. And the reason I say that is because my sister had taken me to a K-pop concert. And she was like, hey, you know, I have an extra ticket to this like K-pop concert, you should come. And I was like, that sounds lame, I don't want to do that, you know. And she's like, just come, it'll be fun. And I was like, whatever. So I went and I was just like, whoa, like this stuff's cool. And I felt like, I didn't want to admit that though. I didn't want to admit that I felt like something that my sister wanted me to do was cool. So she's like, are you having fun? I was like, yeah, that's cool, it's all right, you know. And then secretly I'm like, I go to my mom and I'm like, I know that they have all these like Korean, like show videos at the Korean video store. Can you like rent those for me? And she said, yeah. So she would rent like Kyo Top 10 and like all these other like Korean variety shows where they would have K-pop performances. So I would literally watch these videos and then I would secretly just try to learn the choreography because I'm like, this looks dope, this looks fun. And then I found one other kid that went to my church at the time who did the same thing. So we are both like closeted K-pop fans. And what we would do was exactly what I was doing, just watching the videos, trying to learn the choreography and just like doing it in our room. And then once we found out that we were both into it, we're like, hey, you want to practice together? And like, teach each other the stuff. We're like, yeah. So we would literally, I would sleep over his place, he would sleep over my place. We would like stay up like to the late hours of the night, just learning and performing K-pop dances in our living rooms for like nothing. There was no, I mean, we weren't even video recording. And then he finally got his hands on a video camera and then he recorded it. And he was like, dude, we should like perform this somewhere. And I was like, where? And so we was like, where else other than like your church talent show, right? So then we found one other guy that was our homie that was also doing the same thing. So we put a little trio group together. We were called Unique. And then we performed at our church talent show. Apparently we were a hit, at least, you know, a hit enough for a church talent show. And then so we're all hype on ourselves. We're like, yo, I think we might be kind of good. You know, so then it was like, all right, what's the next level? Like, we gotta perform this somewhere else. And then we found out about, they had these Korean festivals that would happen all around LA. And so we heard that there was like a Korean festival/talent show at CSUN, Cal State Northridge. So we signed up for it and we entered. And this is our first ever, you know, outside of church talent show. Like, this is us stepping into like the community of just like LA. And then we competed in our first, you know, I guess sort of public talent show. And then we placed third. And we're like, whoa, that was not bad. We got third place, you know? And then we found out about more and more festivals, and we got into this other one, and then we ended up really winning the grand prize for there. And so that was when I found my, like, okay, I fell in love with dance. Like, all right, now dance is my thing. Now all I wanted to do was like learn more K-pop dances. And fast forward, so I'm graduating high school now. So this, I'm going to date myself. This is 99. I graduated in 99. And after graduation, you know, I kept doing all the K-pop covers and all these things, dancing in like Korean American culture nights and things like that. And then I found that there was this whole other scene of dance that was not K-pop, but it was just larger teams competing in a sort of a collegiate circuit. And what I mean by collegiate, like all these colleges from like UCLA to UC Irvine, USC, UCSD, like all the colleges, they all had their like larger hip hop teams. And I was like, whoa, what is this? And I would see these performances, and you know, there'd be like 15, 20 people on stage with like these crazy formations and all these things. And I'm like, yo, this looks way next level than what I'm doing right now. And so I started again, I'm a very curious person. And I think that's something that I've always had. And I still have to this day. And, you know, when I want to take it back to what I started with, like the whole term unconventional, I think my curiosity has always pushed me towards doing things that were kind of risky or unconventional, because I'm like, oh, I don't know what this is. It's intriguing. I want to go find out more. And so, yeah, I really just dove just deep into the collegiate scene. And then I started to hear about teams like, you know, UCLA's ACA Hip Hop, and then UCI had CADC and Kaba Modern. And so I really wanted to like dance on that level, right? And I definitely, so I graduated high school barely, and now I'm at a community college. And then I just have a serious case of FOMO for all my friends that are like at UCLA living the dorm room life and talking about the dorm food's so good. You can go down, you can eat whatever you want. And like, we go do these late night boba runs. And I'm like, I'm not doing any of that right now. Right now, I feel like I'm still stuck in high school. Like I just drive to a bigger high school and my classes are boring. And so FOMO is a very powerful thing, right? I'm just like, man, I'm missing out on life right now. And of course, at this point now, I'm realizing, well, crap. I mean, you got yourself here by not taking school seriously. The only way you're going to get out of it is you need to fix it. You know, you need to figure out how you're going to get yourself out of this community college and transfer to a four-year university. And so that was when I was like, all right, I guess this is it. I gotta take school seriously. And so I just buckled down. I started studying, started actually doing my homework, you know, and like bringing my grades up. And then I was like, all right, I'm gonna transfer out of here. And then so I transferred to a few, or I applied to a few UCs, and then UCI. So they were known for having, you know, at that time was like probably one of the best, most prestigious sort of dance crews. Kaba Modern was, they repped UCI. And I was like, oh shoot, UCI, that's where Kaba's at. I was like, man, I wouldn't mind going over there. And then, you know, I was thinking about what I wanted to major in. And again, I only wanted to do things that I felt to be interesting. And I was like, man, I love movies. I love like TV film. Maybe I want to work in that. So I applied for the film studies major at UCI. So I went in as a film studies major, and all the while I was like, man, I want to try to dance with Kaba though, because you know they're like the team to be with. So fast forward, I auditioned for Kaba. I made it, on the team. And then I had opportunity to also choreograph for the team, which kind of gave me my first shot at like putting my own stuff out there. And you know, this is prior to YouTube and all that stuff too. So this is all like live events. You either go there and sit in the audience and see it, or you hear about it from your friends. And sometimes there would be a video, like some like janky video footage of someone on a camcorder that would like have it, and then somehow that would get circulated. So it's all very just like word of mouth, very guerrilla style. But yeah, I got my opportunities to choreograph, and then I guess I kind of started to kind of create a buzz within the dance community, seeing that like, yo, Kaba has this guy Ben Chung, and he put out this piece. It's dope, and like. So from there, I started to get opportunities to teach, like studios and other teams would invite me and be like, hey, like, can you come and teach us and put out, you know, put a routine on us or whatever. So I was like, yeah, I'm down. And then, you know, I graduated college in 04. And that was where I was very curious, because like, you know, I graduated with a film studies degree. So I'm like, all right, you know, I guess I can try to take this degree and put it to work and go work in film somewhere. But I do want to dance. So I kind of did both for a while. Like I landed a job at NTV right out of college. All the while I was still like trying to juggle that with dance. And dance was something that, you know, obviously takes your time. You know, you want to practice, you have these performances that you're rehearsing for. But, you know, if you know anything about working in like the film and, you know, TV production, like those are long days. You're putting in like 12 hour minimum days, you know? So there was just like no time for me to do both. And at that time, one of my friends who I knew was dancing professionally. He was like, you know, going to the auditions, dancing in music videos, booking tours, commercials, movies. And I remember being at work one time and I was chatting with him on AIM, and I'm using my little typing fingers here. If anybody knows what AIM is, again, I'm dating myself. So I'm online with JD, and I'm like, hey JD, so I really want to give like the dance like industry a shot, but like, you know, I have this job at MTV and I'm kind of like, I can't do both. And he was like, well, is that job something that you can come back to later in life? You know, like, and I was like, yeah, I guess I don't have to do this right now. And he's like, well, dance is probably something that you want to figure out when you're young. And I was like, well, that's a great point. And he's like, well, that's my advice. And I was like, sounds good enough for me. So I said, all right. So I quit my job at NTV. And then I went for it fully. And I, you know, I got an agent. You know, I would go to these agency auditions. And then, you know, you go to the auditions, you start booking little jobs here and there. I was turning in my reel and my resume to the local dance studios to try to teach classes. And then I got put on like the sub list where, you know, if an instructor couldn't make it, they would hit up their subs to come and teach classes. So you kind of like work your way into their roster. And so now this is like 06, 2006. And at this time I had already, so Jabberwockies, which is, you know, my former crew, they had started in 2003. And by this time they were kind of like street legends. So they started in 2003, there was no TV show. They were just kind of like, just these dance community icons. They were just kind of like, yo, who are these guys? Like, you know, again, there's no media coverage of any of this for people to really know who is who. You just kind of hear about it through like the scene. And I kind of, you know, when I was at their very first performance in 2003, and I lost my mind, and I was like, man, these guys are gonna change the world with dance. And for me, again, my curiosity and my curiosity paired with ambition, when I find a strong like pull towards something, like, and this is me knowing it now. I didn't know this then. I wasn't consciously doing this then. This is me, you know, I'm about to turn 40. I literally turned 40 in 2 days. So like, there's a lot of like self-reflection you do, you know, as you kind of like hit your new you know, chapters in life. And I'm like, man, like, how did I even get here? Like, why am I still even doing this? Anyway, that's a whole other story. We can get to that. But anyway, so back then when I saw Jabberwockies perform, I was like, man, I need to just somehow figure out who these guys are and just be in their presence. And I did, you know, and I just kind of found out like, oh, I heard that guy from Culture Shock. He's also a Jabberwocky. Like, oh, that dude's a Jabberwocky. And then, but some of those guys knew who I was even because I was on Kaba at that time. So they had seen my choreography via Kaba. So they were like, oh yeah, you're that dude, Ben. You choreographed that Drop It Like It's Hot routine. Yeah, that thing was dope. You know, and then we would exchange contact information. Like, yeah, man, we should hang out and da 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 da. And so, you know, just kind of organically, I would end up hanging out with some of the guys. And then, you know, Fee, who was one of the guys who actually was the most local to me, he lived in North Hollywood at the time. And so when I met Fee, he was like, yeah, man, like, if you ever want to swing by, like, NoHo, and I teach a class at Millennium, you should just come by and come and take my class. Like, you know, sign in, you don't have to pay or whatever. I was like, I'm not going to say no to that. So I would go over to Fee's class all the time and take his class. And then, you know, afterwards we would hang out, you know, go eat and whatever. And just through like naturally hanging out. And then I became friends with like all the guys. And then eventually they're like, yo, man, you should just get down with us, you know? And then this is 2007 when they were about to get on America's Got Talent, which was like in its first season. And they're like, yeah, dude, get down with us. We're about to do this TV show. So I was like, say less, I'm down, you know? So like, I got down with those guys. You know, there was a whole garage battle scene that we don't need to get into, but it was very dance movie-esque. But, you know, they battled me into the crew. And then, you know, we did America's Got Talent. We only advanced to like the second round and we got cut. And we're like, all right, screw all this reality TV stuff. Stuff's fake, right? And like, we didn't want to do this anymore. And then we were just still doing our own thing. And then next year, 2008, we hear that like, yo, there's this new show on MTV, Randy Jackson's America's Best Dance Crew. And you know, the producers of the show are telling Jabberwockies to come and audition. And we're like, nah, we're done with all this reality TV stuff. But the eldest member in our crew at the time, his name is Gary Kendall, rest in peace. You know, he was like, nah, we got to go do this show. Like, I told you guys, we're going to change the world. And the only way we're going to do that is the world needs to know who we are. We need to show the world who we are. And like, TV is the ticket. So we're like, all right, G, we'll do it. You know, so we auditioned for the show. And right before we did the show, right before the audition for the show, actually, Gary ended up passing away. And that was the turning point for us. It was either we're going to not do this anymore because we were only going to do it because G wanted us to do it, or we have to do it because that was like G's kind of final, like, yo, get on that show, win it, change the world. So like, all right, we're like, we got to do it for G. And so we ended up doing the show. We ended up winning the show. And then that like, that just set everything off, man. And like, that was like the, you know, dance was hot. Dance crews were hot. They were like, yo, Asians can dance. Like, you know, there was all these like sort of weird stereotypes that were broken and created. And it was it just disrupted so many things. This was like the beginning of social media. Like YouTube was brand new at the time. So even then people were like, what's YouTube? You know, there was no social media. Like Twitter wasn't even out yet. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think at that time, the only social media that was like popping was like MySpace. And then, so this predates even Facebook, you know? So anyway, like it was just this perfect storm of like, you know, we won this show that was like, everybody was watching. And I had no idea people were even watching the show because there was no, again, this is season one. So there's nothing for us to compare it to. We were locked up in a hotel. We didn't even have MTV at the hotel, so we couldn't even watch the show. We're like, is this even a real show? But like, we had very limited contact with the outside world. I swear we call it the Radisson Penitentiary. When we were stuck in this Radisson hotel, we're like, yo, we're like in jail right now. Like, they take away our cell phones. They like, you know, we only have limited contact with our family. But like, I remember one time my family came, they actually allowed our family to come and visit us. Again, like family visitation, it was like limited amount. And so when my family came, they brought like, my mom cooked a bunch of like Korean food and wanted to like feed everybody. And then my brother and my sister were like, yo, this show is huge right now. I'm like, what are you guys talking about? They're like, that's all my friends talk about at school. And my sister's like, all my coworkers are all watching it. And I'm like, really? And like, we had no idea. Cause again, we don't even watch the show ourselves because we don't even have MTV here. And then, yeah, it became this phenomenon. And you know, again, that was a time where I feel like the disruption was, it was again, perfect timing. And, you know, it definitely just opened up this different category now of dance. Cause prior to, you know, things like America's Best Dance Crew and even like So You Think You Can Dance, like people's thoughts about dance was like you dance behind an artist. That's like the pinnacle. Like if I can audition for Usher, maybe I'll book his tour, then I go on tour with Usher. Then hopefully once that tour is done, I can do another audition, book another tour, do that, or book a commercial so that I can get residuals. Maybe a movie. Like there's all these things that's like you're hoping to book jobs. That's kind of like the top tier of a dance career. And then maybe you can make it as a choreographer where you can now be the person to create and set the movement for an artist, for a project, and then kind of artistically direct. But with what the dance crew shows did was Jabberwockies actually essentially became the main stage act. You know, like we didn't have to dance behind an Usher or a Justin Timberlake. We were Usher and Justin Timberlake. We were holding down a stage by ourselves. And then we eventually landed a show in Las Vegas, which they're still currently at. They're there for over 10 years now. And so it made a whole new category for dance, a new opportunity where dance was now looked at as the centerpiece. It wasn't just the periphery. It wasn't just the supporting act to the main one single person. It's like the dance is the act itself. And once I saw that, and you know, we got into Las Vegas and then we're creating, you know, a brand out of this, you know, we are an idea. We have merchandise. We have fans, we have a home, we have a show that's themed around us. Then it opened my eyes to be like, whoa, there are endless possibilities here. You know what I mean? And I think that was the thing that was like that unlock for me, where once I knew that, and it's not just in dance, I think it's possible in anything, but we were able to do it within dance. And so, you know, once I decided that it was time for me to come back home to LA, you know, I felt that my Vegas journey was done. I came back to LA with an unlocked mind, but unsure of where to put my focus. And, you know, that was in 2014, which is when I came back and I joined Kinja's, which is a whole other story. I've been talking nonstop for like 30 minutes right now. I feel, I don't know if you want to.
No, I think that was
in, or
was
if you have really a question or if I'm just rambling.
No, yeah, that was really good. I remember watching Jabberwockies back then, and then I didn't know that was what paved the way for like Just Dance, you know, teams to be the center stage. So, and it almost seems like a movie, right? Like, you know, just like in Fast and Furious, there was Paul Walker who passed away during that filming. Your friend G, he passed away, but you kind of took it upon yourselves to follow through with it, with the whole rest of the competition. You guys did change the world, if you think about it, right? The dance world, you know, all of that. But like, I'm always... Like what I noticed though about you is kind of like your curiosity of dance, you pursued it, like your obsession led you to that, but it actually like took you down a route. Whereas if you hadn't pursued that, and if you were just like, hey, I'm just going to be safe with my job and just stick to it. Like your friend told you, hey, you could always come back to this, which was kind of like for me with med school, like you could always come back to this if it doesn't work out, but you you don't try things now and take risks now, how will you ever find out what could have happened? Right?
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people, when they're old, the worst thing you can live with is regret. And I think Gary Vaynerchuk, he talks about that too, that when you're 80, you know, you don't regret the things you did, you regret the things you didn't do. And so I think the fact that you actually followed through and, you know, you didn't have people saying you can't do this, you can't do that. I think a lot of people don't try for what they want because of those voices, whether it's from friends or family that you can't do it. Maybe from conditioning from when they were young, they were bullied or they felt like they had an inferiority complex, things like that. You know, it's good that you kind of didn't have that and you just kind of went for it. And, you know, it's like, if you're not going to do it, who's going to do it? You know, if you're not going to try and take risks, who's going to do that for you? You know, your parents can't do that. It's only up to you. And so I think that's great. But, you know, I also want to ask, like, wasn't there also uncertainty because you have, like, bills you have to pay? You weren't married. But I think a big reason why people don't take risks is also like, hey, I need to pay for my bills. I, you know, when they have family to take care of, they can't take as much risk. So because you didn't have those responsibilities, you were able to take those risks. But yeah, like how about finances and things like that? How was that able to be worked out? Like, were you being paid as you were dancing? Like, kind of curious to hear about that part.
That's a great, great question, you know? And, you know, I believe like everything happens for you, right? There's something that like Ed Milet says, Tony Robbins says, like a lot of people say that like life happens for you and not to you. And, and that means everything, the good stuff and the bad, like the stuff that's easy to take and pleasant to take, and the stuff that's a little harsh and difficult to take, like that happens. If you can adapt the mindset that is for you, AKA it's for your benefit, it's for your good, then you can shift. You can shift how you receive anything. You know what I'm saying? Even the stuff that's tough. And so I look at my life too, right? So I'm about to be 40 years old, still single, no kids. And then I look at my friends and my peers who are my age or even younger, you know, married, kids. And so it's easy for me, or it can be easy for me, to do the comparison game and be like, did I screw up somewhere? Or am I in my own boat? Like, where I'm looking at everyone else, they're all in the similar boat and I'm over here in my own little rowboat. And I can look at that as like, let that comparison make me feel like there's something wrong with me, right? But one thing that I've definitely learned, and you know, this may come from my faith in God, you know, like I'm a Christian and, you know, I believe that like God is fully in control and his timing is impeccable, even when it seems like it's taking forever, you know, like, and my, the analogy that I like to, you know, look at when it comes to time is seasons, right? The seasons of, you know, the way that the world works, from, you know, winter, spring, fall, summer, like all this stuff, things happen within those seasons, right? Like you can't grow a tree in a night. You have to first plant the seed, water it, let the sun and soil do its thing. And then eventually you'll start to see a sprout. And then eventually that sprout turns into a plant, into a tree, and bears fruit. And then the fruits fall, the leaves fall, and it recycles back. So my point is this, like, if you are wanting an orange tomorrow and you plant an orange tree seed in the ground tonight, you're not going to get an orange tomorrow. It's going to take a long time for that seed to produce that orange. And that's the whole concept of like, things will only happen when the time that is needed for that thing to grow is present, you know, like time needs to be present in order for that growth to happen. And everybody has their own path. Everyone has their own trajectory, timing. I've always kind of, you know, as of late, actually, I can't say always, as of lately, I've kind of looked at my life's path as like, huh, I've always been like a late bloomer, you know, like I always like, things don't really like click with me as fast as it may with other people. And then that could also do one of two things too. That can also be very like discouraging. It could turn into an insecurity of like, oh man, why am I a late bloomer? Am I dumb? Am I like, what's wrong with me? Why does it take me so long to understand something when this person got it right away? Again, that's only when you compare yourself to somebody will that make you feel like there's something wrong there. So what I've learned is that, okay, I'm a late bloomer. That's fine. That was how God had created me and he set me on my path. But being a late bloomer and looking at some of the stuff that I have been able to accomplish in my life, not by my own doing, I'll say not at all. I would say God is very instrumental to every aspect of my life. But I've been in spaces that many, many other people have never seen. Many, many people have never touched. You know, and a part of being a late bloomer, there comes the imposter syndrome and all that that comes with it, right? You're like, oh, like, am I even supposed to be here? Like, did I sneak in through the back door? Hopefully no one catches me here, because if they do, they'll kick me out. You know, I've had that / have that all the time, you know? But for me, going back to being curious, which curiosity leads to unconventional pursuits, which is fueled by this relentless ambition to just figure it out. That's kind of been the simple formula for how I've been able to accomplish and do the things that I have been able to do. And so with that, I'm kind of like learning to embrace the fact that, like, yeah, sometimes by a certain age, people think, oh, but you're this old, you should be living in this type of a house, driving this type of a car, have this many kids and make this much money. Like, says who? You know what I mean? Like, that is no one to say that there is a standard for that. And so when you mention like how I was able to, you know, like, you know, how do I manage finances? How do I pay the bills? How do I put food on the table, pay my rent and all that? When there's a will, there's a way, you know? And one thing that I know about, let's just say dancers, and I'm not going to just limit it to dancers, but I'll say dancers because that was kind of the path that I chose to do it. Dancers are entrepreneurs, whether they realize it or not, because an entrepreneur, by definition, you create your own business. Like, you build something from scratch and you hope to find a way to sustain it and hopefully scale it, right? You know, grow it as if you want, if it's supposed to be something that's a little bit more than just yourself, then you want to be able to scale it so that, you know, as my business grows, I don't have to like hire all this staff where now we can't sustain, right? So, but for me, like, I was always very good at figuring out, how am I going to make money with this? And, you know, when you look at your options, you can get very creative. And thankfully, one of the things for dance that is very monetizable is teaching dance. Like, people want to learn stuff, right? People want to, hey, teach me how to dance. It's like, just like how piano lessons are a thing, right? You pay someone to teach you piano. Same thing with dance, you know? So I started really getting on my teaching hustle where I would, you know, hit up the studios and teach classes. And then once you start getting your name out there as a teacher, then there's larger, you know, venues and larger arenas like conventions and things like that, where you can go, they'll fly you out for a weekend to teach like a bunch of dance studio kids. And, you know, there's higher rates and things like that. And then on, you know, on the side of those things, and there are those, your auditions, you got to hustle, you got to go to the auditions, whether that's booking commercial work, whether that's booking background work, you know what I'm saying? Like, and you can't be too proud to be like, ah, that's background work. I'm above that. Like, you know, when you're a hustler and you talk about Gary Vee talks about it all the time. Like, be willing to eat pigeon for, you know what I mean? Like, eat the humble pie for as long as you need to. Keep your head low and stay quiet until you're ready to come out. Like, there's no shame in that. And like, that's why I love Gary Vee's approach on, like, you know, I know he's a very successful business entrepreneur and he's created multiple, you know, very successful ventures and, you know, has had like the foresight to invest well and things like that. But like, he's still that dude who loves to hit up yard sales and find Hot Wheels and flip them. And you know what I mean? He still has that gritty, do whatever it takes mentality that has gotten him to where he's at today. And, you know, I listen to guys like Gary Vee a lot and it inspires me because it makes me feel like my story is my story, no one else's. And, you know, like from there, like, sure, you work hard enough and you learn from your mistakes. You learn to manage your finances. You learn to invest. You learn to save. You learn to get out of debt. You learn to, you know, live within your means or below your means if you can. And then, you know, once you do that enough, then you start realizing, oh shoot, I've kind of developed a system. You know what I mean? And like, and again, like, and I know people who are doing the dance life to like barista at Starbucks to serving at a restaurant to teaching dance to audition. Like, people do all kinds of stuff to try to make it. And like, again, no shame in anyone's game. I think you got to do what you got to do. But that's the important thing. You have to do what you have to do. Otherwise, no one's going to do it for you. If you chose that path as a dancer, you know, no one's going to hand you a job. Like, it's up to you to get yourself out there. It's up to you to think like, I could teach dance. I wonder if I could like make clothes. I wonder if anyone would buy my clothes. And then dancers started to make their own merch and then people would buy it. It's like, well, you just found a new business for yourself. You know what I'm saying? So I think there's so many creative ways that not just a dancer, but anybody, should you choose a route. And again, it really has to come down to, are you really passionate about it? And you know, not to keep talking about Gary Vee, but he talks about all the time, if you're not passionate about the thing that you're pursuing, you're going to burn out. You know, like, the only way that you're going to keep going when the money's not there, when the hours are late, when your body is hurting and you're tired, it's your passion for it. It's like, dang, I love it though. Like, there isn't anything else that I would be doing right now other than this, you know? And to me, I found that through dance. And like, you know, now that I've kind of developed, you know, been a part of two very successful dance brands and businesses, you know, even me now as an individual expanding, what's my reach even after this? Like, what's going to be my next dance? You know what I'm saying? What is the thing that I'm going to pour my next 20 plus years into? And I'm in that space now and I'm playing around with a few projects and a few things that, you know, I've been able to launch, you know, even using things like COVID. Unfortunately, yeah, like, COVID was difficult for everyone. But I think, again, if you take that philosophy of life happens for you and not to you, then if I think that COVID happened for me, then I'm like, oh, shoot, well, what was it for? You know, it's like, maybe it was to launch an at-home fitness program because all the gyms are closed. Everyone's at home. Everyone's trying to figure out how to stay in shape at home. Like, well, there's a perfect time for that. And you know, digital technology is not going anywhere but up. You know, like, if we can make working out at home accessible to the masses, hey, I think that's a great opportunity. And thank you, COVID. Like, that's something that helped us launch that, you know. And even like my passion for clothing and fashion and apparel, like, you know, unfortunately, with all just the Asian hate stuff that's been happening, you know, for me, being a proud Korean American, I'm like, man, it's not time for us to you know, crawl into a hole and be like, please, please don't attack me. He's like, no, this is time for us to be bold. It's time for us to be proud and represent for our culture and our communities. And not in an aggressive way, but in a very bold and proud way, you know? So that's kind of what the Chosun represents. You know, the clothing line, this is actually one of the shirts that we're dropping. Let's see if you can see that. It says, not your model minority. And
it's pretty cool.
Yeah, you know, we're looking at things like COVID and, you know, the hustle as like, oh man, it's tough. It's a grind. It's like, yeah, it is. But you can flip that. And if you can weather those storms and you can navigate through all that, the reward is so much, it's so much greater. Yeah, like the struggles are struggle. They're a struggle, you know what I mean? They're tough, but like if you can sit through those things and work through those things, when you can win, those wins become that much sweeter. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. So, dang, that was really good. That was a really good advice for any of those looking to start their own thing or looking for, you know, purpose in their life, what to do. I think what I really like about people like you I interview is like, it's almost like you found your purpose or calling in life, you know? And I think that's one of the biggest things that I wanted growing up, because they're like, what do you want to be when you grow up, right? People ask you that when you're like a little kid, and it's like, some say, oh, I want to be a firefighter, policeman, but it's like, who do you really want to be? Like, you'll never know. You know, I think, I mean, not to mention Gary Vee again, but he said, hey, you're 57. You don't have, you know, your life figured out. Don't expect your 22-year-old to have life figured out, just to make yourself look good. And a lot of parents want their kids to, you know, be a doctor or lawyer to make themselves look good. But it's like, hey, you haven't even figured your life out. You don't even know what you want to do with your life. So why put that pressure on your kids when they're just, you know, trying to figure out what they want in life, you know? So like, it's like, I really like hearing stories like yours, because it's like, man, it's like everything you've gone through was for a reason, right? Like you said, life happens for you, not to you. Obviously it's hard, you know, like if say like you broke your hip and you're like, you know, you're like struggling, but it's like, even those struggles are, if you never had those, you would never grow and you would never be taught a certain lesson, right? So yeah, it's great. I wish everyone listening can find their purpose or calling in life and do what they're here to do on earth, because I think a lot of people, they're doing what they're doing just for a paycheck, or they're doing what they're doing just to kind of get by. But it's like, you don't want to live a life where you just get by, and when you're 80 years old you're like, what did I do with my life? And a lot of them, they're like living like robots or zombies. They don't think about it. So hopefully those listening will actually think about, what do I want to do with my life? What can I try and figure out, just like you did with dance? So, yeah, I know you have to leave pretty soon, but, you know, where can people find out more about you, Ben? And also the last question would be, what any advice would you have for those upcoming entrepreneurs or those looking to kind of do something?
Yeah, no, I appreciate it, man. I do got a jam soon, but something I definitely want to, I guess, kind of drive home with the whole, yeah, like, you know, making it by, do what you got to do. Again, I think the comparison game is the biggest trap. And I'm only saying this not because I'm like, oh yeah, I've conquered that. I don't compare myself. No, I compare myself every day. And that's why I need to say things like this, almost as like, it's a reminder to myself, is to check myself. Like, this is something that it's always gonna be tempting to do. You open up social media, you start scrolling, and then you're looking at how everybody's like killing it in this way or that. And then of course, the question that's in my head is like, what am I doing it to kill it like this? And that's not necessarily a bad thing. Sometimes people motivate you because they're doing well, right? They're like, oh shoot, my friend just put out this. What am I doing over here? Let me get off my butt and let me do something, right? So sometimes comparison can be a motivator, but when you let it become the definer of like whether you're doing well or not. Now that's a dangerous place, you know what I mean? And I think there's no shame in taking the time to build yourself up. There's no shame in asking for help. You know what I'm saying? I think for me, one thing that I've learned is I can be very curious, ambitious, go-getter on my own, but I don't enjoy it. Like, I don't enjoy doing something just by myself, because then it's like, who am I going to share it with? I'm a very extroverted person. I love sharing with people. I love breaking bread with people. I love building with people and, you know, enjoying the victories with my friends and stuff. And, you know, that's something that what I've learned about Kinjas, you know, like that's, you know, so me being a part of Kinjas now for almost 8 years, and, you know, being a co-owner to being able to build the business side of it and having learned a whole new set of lessons building similar yet very different business from even Jabberwockies, you know, and having to pivot through a pandemic to being flexible to transition with different aspects of the business either being chopped off or added on. Like, that's just the reality of it. Like, if you are unwilling to adapt to change, you're gonna die. You know what I'm saying? Like, we have to be flexible. It's like, you know, there's that proverb, but be like bamboo. Like, it's strong, it's a strong piece of wood, but it can bend. You know what I mean? You have to be flexible. And so yeah, I think that's something that I personally wanna, I guess, if I can leave any sort of message or encouragement to anybody out there that's curious about pursuing your passion, discouraged because things don't seem to be working out right now, I'll say the first question you should ask yourself is, do you really love it? Do you really want to do this? You know what I'm saying? And ask yourself, if you can say, yeah, I do, then ask yourself why. Is it because it's going to make you a lot of money? Which is not a bad answer. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can make a lot of money doing anything. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can make a lot of money being a doctor. You can make a lot of money selling oranges. You know what I'm saying? It's just mad. It's a different hustle. You know what I mean? Like, you just got to hustle different. So you can make the money doing anything. So the question is, like, do you really enjoy it? Are you really passionate about it? And if you can say yes to that question, then I will say, then be willing to work your butt off. You know what I mean? Like, one thing that when Kobe had passed last year, and I'll be honest, I'm not a huge sports fan, but I became a huge Kobe fan because of the man he was, you know, like what he represented. You know, he was the definition of hard work. He was the guy who was putting in the extra hours that no one was willing to put in. And that's why he was able to excel. So like that sort of Mamba mentality is something that I try to adapt into or adopt into everything that I do. Like, I want to do Mamba mentality with everything. Like, when it comes to my training and dance, okay, well, I'm almost 40 years old. I don't really know anybody who is at my age still performing at like a full-time level. And if I want to continue that, I got to put in extra work. I got to stretch more. I got to do more self-care to make sure that my body doesn't break down. So like things like nutrition, you know, working out, like strength training, flexibility training, all that stuff, I take very seriously. And, you know, when it comes to building businesses, like, well, while everyone's out or while everyone's just Netflixing at night, I'm studying, I'm learning from, you know, taking online business courses to learning how to develop my mind as a salesman, learning how to develop my mind as an entrepreneur, as a businessman. Like, be willing to sacrifice, you know, your time. And I think that's the thing, like, well, I need me time. And I'm a big proponent of self-care and make sure that you're doing what you need to do to take care of yourself. But your me time can be used in many ways, or you can kill two birds with one stone. You know, when for me, if I'm going to study something and I'm like, I'm going to watch an online course and try to, you know, develop my mind, that is my me time where I can enjoy myself, because I can lay my head down to bed and be like, man, I learned, that was exciting. Like, I'm stoked for tomorrow. You know what I mean? So like learning how to hack your own system, I think is really important. And just be willing to, I don't know, man, be gritty, but enjoy the ride. You know, I think there's something that this day and age, especially with social media and everything moving so fast, I think it's easy to constantly be thinking or like living in the future. You know, you're either living in the future or you're like focusing on your past and you're forgetting about your present. You know, like take the time to enjoy the ride. A lot of times, like, this is super random, but like I love running. I picked up running during COVID. One of my favorite things about running is that you have no choice but to be present, because you have this long run that you have. I'm not thinking about when am I going to finish. I'm just like, man, this run is dope right now. Like, this breeze that I'm feeling is dope right now. The fact that I have legs that are moving, a lot of people don't have legs that can move like this. You know what I mean? Like, I have like clean air to breathe. I have like the beautiful skyline that I can look at. I'm looking over the beach. I'm looking over downtown. I'm at this park, like whatever it is. It just makes me feel like this present moment is perfect. And like, it helps me really appreciate not only the present moment, but then like what's in my life, the people in my life, physically, how I am blessed to, you know what I'm saying? Like so many things. I think as much as you want to grind, and I'm trying to get this goal, that's fine. But don't forget to live in the present moment, because this stuff flies by so fast. You know what I mean? When I look at my dance career and think that I've been doing this for over 20 years, it trips me out, man. Like, I feel like I remember my first dance class that I ever took, like it was last year. You know what I mean? And then here I am 20 plus years later, still doing it. And like, seen and experienced so many things in between, but it flies by. So, you know, I try to remind myself, man, live in the present and yeah, continue to work hard, do what everything you got to do, but yeah, take your time to enjoy, be thankful. Gratitude is huge. You know, I thank God every day for every breath that I can take, every, I feel like I'm about to get into the P. Diddy song and right now, but like, yeah, man, it's like real talk. Every move, like every time I can dance, perform, I'm like, wow, God, I could still do this. This is tight. Thank you. You know, and like having that attitude of gratitude will always, it helps you stay in the present as well. But yeah, I do got to run. Dude, Ray, thank sure. you so much for having me on. For anyone that's curious. Yeah, if you want to follow the journey, I'm on social media. I guess I'm most active on Instagram. My personal is BTEK, B-T-E-K underscore Ben Chung. Same name on TikTok. I need to get my TikTok up. Find me on LinkedIn, Twitter, same thing. All my handles are the same. Awesome. And then for Kinjas, yeah, it's K-I-N-J-A-Z, Kinjas.com. You know, we have our summer class series that's going on over at the Row in Arts District. We're teaching beginners levels classes Wednesdays and Saturdays. So if you want to get some dance moves in, get some training in, come and dance with us over at the Row. And yeah, Kinja Bang Noodles. I want to shout out Kinja Bang Noodles. We just restocked. That was another COVID baby that we had. You know, it was something that we had actually been in development with it for like over a year before even COVID happened, but we launched the noodles brand. It's all plant-based, never fried. It's air-dried noodles. From what we hear, they're pretty tasty. I think they're tasty, but I could be biased. But you know, you can read the Amazon reviews to check it out. But yeah, you can find them on Amazon or kinjabangnoodles.com. Kinja's podcast, we're about to come back for a season 2, so be on the lookout for that. You can find that anywhere you find your streaming podcasts. And I'm stoked for the launch of the Chosun. We're on IG, just at the Joseon, the Chosun.
Okay. It's dynasty, right?
The dynasty, exactly. And if you got trying to get your at home fitness on, Break Hit, we're on IG at Break, B-R-E-A-K, EAK Hit HIIT, and breakhit.com is where you can download the app.
Sick. Awesome. Yeah, well, everyone who enjoyed this, you know, interview, just definitely check out all those links. I'll have it in the description. And yeah, I want to thank you, Ben, taking the time and doing this interview.
Appreciate you, man. Thank you, Ray.